it's tricky. We're sort of wading into unprecedented territory here.
Time ticks for TikTok. It's Wednesday, August 5th. This is VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. You'll find us on Instagram, Twitter, YouTube, and of course at VOA Asia Facebook. Also ahead, an Australian state disaster, a look at the incumbent U.S. president, the business of Asian tech, a special marathon, and a drive-in circus. It's all on today's VOA Asia. The Chinese company that owns popular video sharing app TikTok says it is exploring all possibilities to ensure that its subsidiary can continue to operate in the United States. Beijing-based ByteDance has come under pressure from Washington to sell off its U.S. TikTok operations over concerns that the company's links to the Chinese government threaten the privacy of U.S. citizens. President Donald Trump has set a September 15th deadline for the sale of the company. For more perspective, VOA's Adriana Jung spoke with Aniki Rikkonen, a research assistant for the Technology and National Security Program at the Center for a New American Security.
I think it remains to be seen pending security review, as they've mentioned. They have until September 15th to sort this out. So lots of news to come in the coming days.
What kind of challenges Microsoft would face during this purchase and also with running TikTok after the purchase completes, if it does?
I think some things to look out for is partially just the mood of the administration. You've seen Trump, threatening to ban TikTok. If you've read The Art of the Deal, he sort of likes to keep everyone on edge until something irons out at the end. And so I think we can possibly look for more curveballs between now and September 15th, which is the deadline for this. I think some things to look out for if Microsoft does actually purchase the company is, does the administration then lobby other countries to come on board as well in a similar way they did with Huawei previously? Microsoft is looking to acquire TikTok's operations, not just in the U.S., but in Canada, Australia, and New Zealand as well. So four of the five eyes. You might see more twists and turns in the story as it unfolds.
What kind of message does this send to other countries?
To me, unfortunately, it sends the message that the U.S. government is still taking a whack-a-mole approach to looking at foreign technologies and what they might mean for national security. And I think ultimately the approach is actually unsustainable. TikTok is only, one company, and it's a reflection actually of China's, the growth of its technology ecosystem and its increasingly global reach. And so I think what the U.S. government will have to do is actually come up with a more robust and consistent framework for how to deal with these issues.
If this purchase goes through, does that mean that ByteDance admit that TikTok has shared user data to the Chinese government?
It doesn't necessarily make the company admit that it's shared data, because some of the issue is that there's the risk of data sharing based on China's national intelligence laws, and so we don't actually know whether or not the data is shared. Something that does give me confidence in the deal is that Microsoft is really staking its reputation on this, and it's going to have to do this very correctly.
Would this deal really help protect user data?
It might. I'm optimistic, given that part of the deal is that Microsoft says they'll have to move all user data to the U.S. and it'll, the people who have access to the data will also be limited. But I think the other thing to look out for really is what happens to the content moderation policies. There's been reporting on, whether TikTok has censored some kind of user data, what messages that the algorithms push out to users. And so I think those will be things to look out for as well.
Due to the Chinese government's long reach, do you really think that if TikTok is bought by Microsoft, it can completely get rid of the Chinese government's control?
I think it's tricky. We're sort of wading into unprecedented territory here, and I think it will add a buffer of protection, but I think we really still need to see, how this plays out. Does this mean that there's a further splintering of TikTok? What do relationships look like between the leadership of TikTok and ByteDance and then with the Communist Party?
We know that TikTok has been banned in, for example, India. So would this open a door for TikTok in other countries, or like how would they react to this?
I would be curious to see on the diplomatic front, you know, whether the U.S. government engages with other countries to try to get them to follow suit. I'm also curious to see how Apple and Google respond, because they run the App Store and the Play Store, and I think there's a possibility perhaps that they'll look at some of their policies regarding what kinds of apps are allowed on there. For instance, not so long ago, you know, there was the Xi Jinping Thought app, which had plenty of issues as well, but because it's less famous than TikTok, sort of flew under the radar.
Aniki Rikkonen is a research assistant for the Technology and National Security Program at the Center for a New American Security. She spoke with VOA's Adriana Zhang. These are among some of the top Asia headlines that you'll find right now when you visit voanews.com. Microsoft in talks to buy TikTok in United States. Japan's Nippon Steel to appeal South Korean court order to seize assets. U.S. troop size in Afghanistan will reduce by 4,000 very soon, according to President Trump. Indian Kashmir curfew imposed ahead of revocation anniversary. Australian whale watchers have close encounter. You'll find expanded coverage of all these stories and so much more when you visit Facebook at VOA Asia and the voanews.com website. VOA Asia continues. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. The Australian state of Victoria has declared a state of disaster and is introducing the country's toughest ever COVID-19 lockdown measures. This move comes as a further 671 cases and 7 deaths were confirmed on Sunday. Australia has had almost 18,000 coronavirus infections. More than 200 people have died. We hear more from Phil Mercer in Sydney.
A public health bushfire is how the authorities in Victoria have described the COVID-19 emergency. You can't smell the smoke and you can't see the flames, but this, they've said, was a wicked enemy. A state of disaster has been declared, and Melbourne, a city of 5 million people, is under tough new restrictions, including a nighttime curfew that will last for 6 weeks. After early success in suppressing the coronavirus, Australia has had fewer confirmed infections and deaths than many other countries. But the worsening situation in Victoria has the entire country on edge. On Sunday, 671 new infections were reported. 7 people died. In the Australian context, these numbers are significant and disturbing. Australia's federal treasurer is Josh Frydenberg.
This is devastating that we're heading for these stage 4 restrictions, that there's curfews imposed, that there's more restrictions on the movement of people throughout the community, of course, more school closures. Nobody wanted to get to this. We feel we're very much in a warlike situation. Every Victorian is on the front line. We can't afford any holes in our defence, so everybody needs to follow these rules. There's only one way out, and that's to stem the tide of new cases.
The Victorian state government says that previous disease control measures were working too slowly. Residents will have to stay within 5 kilometres of their homes, and only one person per household is allowed to go shopping for food each day. Schools and childcare centres will close. Australia's strictest lockdown follows the deadliest week of the pandemic here so far. Health experts believe a surge in COVID-19 cases was exacerbated by a relaxation of earlier restrictions, complacency on social distancing, and sheer bad luck. A state of disaster gives police and emergency services broader powers to enforce restrictions, including the curfew. It is an emergency that constitutes, or is likely to constitute, a significant and widespread danger to life or property in Victoria. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
Happening now in Asia, commuter trains, buses and other public vehicles stayed off main roads of Manila Tuesday as police staffed checkpoints to restrict travel after surging coronavirus cases forced another lockdown. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're glad you've chosen to spend part of your morning with us at VOA Asia. Americans will go to the polls November 3rd to elect a president. The incumbent, Republican Donald Trump, and his presumptive Democratic challenger Joe Biden both face a polarized electorate. In this report, Mike O'Sullivan profiles the incumbent president and his re-election message to the American people.
He is draining the political swamp, defending his country's borders, and renewing the dream for forgotten Americans, say his supporters.
It's probably never been a time when candidates are so different. We want law and order. They don't want law and order. We want strong closed borders with people able to come in through merit, through a legal process.
The other view of Trump, he's not up to the job, says his Democratic rival.
Dangerously incompetent and incapable, in my view, of world leadership and leadership at home.
Trump is a real estate magnate and former reality television star who faced skepticism when he announced his run for the presidency in 2015. He beat Democrat and former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton, surprising many by connecting with millions of Americans.
Disproportionately, they're blue-collar workers. Disproportionately, they do not have a college education. But their loyalty to Trump is fierce.
Trump faced allegations that he tried to trade U.S. foreign aid to Ukraine for political favors. The House of Representatives impeached Trump on charges of abuse of power and obstruction of Congress. A witch hunt, Trump declared, claiming vindication after the Republican-dominated Senate acquitted him. Then he faced another challenge.
Tonight, I want to speak with you about our nation's unprecedented response to the coronavirus outbreak.
As the number of virus cases and deaths in America grew, Trump's polling numbers sank. Adding to political controversy, national protests over the deaths of African-American men in police custody and outbreaks of violent demonstrations in some cities, followed by Trump's use of federal troops to tamp down the protests.
I think that the coronavirus ripped off the Band-Aid that has been covering a lot of long festering sores.
While Biden leads in most polls, Trump's base is mostly sticking by him.
And by and large, I think most Republicans have gotten the policies that they wanted. They wanted lower taxes. They wanted conservatives on the Supreme Court. For example, they wanted to cut down on immigration.
But adding to Trump's troubles, recent news that the U.S. economy suffered its biggest drop on record. With public health officials discouraging mass rallies, it's hard to generate the excitement usually seen in a political campaign over social media.
When do we want it?
Now!
Challenges for Trump in this election year. Mike O'Sullivan, VOA News, Los Angeles.
After you listen to VOA Asia, you can see VOA Asia. VOA Asia is on YouTube. See and share the fun with Food Bites, our weekly culinary dive into foods from the homeland. Recipes that came with chefs who immigrated to the United States. Students enrolling in U.S. schools can get their first lessons about life on campus. Subscribe for free. See us often at VOA Asia YouTube.
This news from VOA Asia. Myanmar leader Aung San Suu Kyi on Tuesday made formal her intention to seek a second term in an election in November. This election is seen as a test of the Southeast Asian nation's tentative democratic reforms. You'll find all the big stories throughout the day on VOA Asia Twitter and Facebook. This is VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, technology is helping in the battle against coronavirus. This is the topic of this week's VOA Asia Business Scene with Ira Melman.
As coronavirus infections climb in Mumbai, authorities in India's worst-hit city are turning to high-tech smart helmets to speed up screenings and identify suspected cases in the financial capital's densely populated slums.
The portable thermoscanners previously deployed in Dubai, Italy, and China enable health workers to record the temperatures of dozens of residents per minute and could emerge as a key weapon in Mumbai's quest to eradicate the virus from the city of 18 million people. Rishikesh Samadansal, a health volunteer with the nonprofit group BJS, Bharatiya Jain Janhatana, had this to say about how the helmet works.
When we used a temperature gun to check for symptoms, it used to take a lot of time. Now that BJS has provided us with these helmets, we're able to screen many people at once and cover a bigger area, so it's very useful.
The helmets were donated to authorities in Mumbai and the nearby city of Pune, which both have been locked in a months-long battle against the pandemic, with cases across India soaring past 1 million recently. But with just two helmets in use in each city, the push to identify and isolate infected residents will take some time. The imported helmets, which cost around 600,000 rupees or about $8,000, are also in high demand in places like Dubai, said Jane, making it very difficult to expand capacity. A young entrepreneur in Pakistan has created an online portal that offers a digital Qurbani experience amid the COVID-19 pandemic. The term Qurbani refers to the sacrifice of animals and Eid al-Adha, which is the festival of the sacrifice. 29-year-old Akib Muhal adapted his business to help facilitate social distancing.
What we try to do online is that we try to create the real essence of Qurbani, which has Islam described us to do in manner of selection of your animal for Qurbani till the meat processing. We launched this project due to COVID-19, and we want people to stay safe, stay homes, and perform their Qurbani online.
According to Mohal, the online portal tries to create the real essence of Qurbani. The service allows customers to buy animals online, as well as check specifications of the animal and experience sacrifices in meat processing.
I saw the goat online and checked the rate for the goat when I visit here and found the same animal that I was offered online. The price of the goat is fair in what is compared with the open animal market. The goat den is so clean, and they also provide us surgical masks and sanitize our hands due to COVID-19 pandemic.
The visitors also have an opportunity to have hands-on experience when they buy an animal online and visit the goat den in person. For Business Scene, I'm Ira Melman.
There is no current evidence that dogs can be infected. Hand washing after contact with all animals is recommended. This protects against other bacteria, such as E. coli and Salmonella, that can pass between animals and humans. For more information, visit www.who.int or www.cdc.gov.
Now on VOA Asia, one Washington, D.C. resident is using the pandemic as an opportunity to test himself by running 350 kilometers. But it's not just boredom that has this runner hitting the road. Maxim Moskalkov has the story.
Marathoner Corey Capelloni has an incredible running resume. He has conquered all sorts of marathons, including a six-day race in the Sahara Desert, believed to be one of the toughest ultramarathons in the world. But his latest run, a 350-kilometer race from Washington, D.C. to Scranton, Pennsylvania, may be his most difficult. At the end of this race, he'll see his grandmother, who has been diagnosed with COVID-19.
And she was becoming increasingly depressed and scared, worried that she wouldn't be able to see us, and she had no contact with family. I mean, she had contact on the phone, but no physical contact with her family and friends. And so initially I decided to start sending her little gifts every week. So I would send her photography books, boxes of chocolate, other snacks.
The idea to run from Washington, D.C. to Scranton, Pennsylvania to see Ruth occurred to Capelloni's girlfriend, Susan Kaminer.
It was beautiful just seeing him, you know, call his grandmother every other day and just the effort he made to keep her spirits up. And I just found that so incredibly moving.
The couple discussed the idea with the nursing home where Ruth was living and turned it into a chance to raise money for the facility. Armed with Google Maps and determination, they decided Susan would accompany her boyfriend in an RV and be responsible for logistics and documenting the raise. But just days before they planned to head, the nursing home contacted Capelloni to tell him his grandma was diagnosed with COVID-19.
We rented an RV to complete this mission. We wanted it to be as self-contained and socially distant as possible. So it was really important for us to just, you know, be on our own and not come into contact with as many people as possible. So the RV was our home. I got to drive it.
The 350-kilometer distance was broken into seven equal parts, each about 50 kilometers long.
Usually when you do an ultramarathon, you train for the ultramarathon, you have some days off before the ultramarathon, you do the ultramarathon, and then you have days off, you relax. Whereas the hard part about this was it was one ultramarathon, after another. So like seven ultramarathons, just your body and mind become really exhausted and sore.
On the seventh day, Capelloni made it to the nursing home. However, he couldn't really see his grandmother. Though she was feeling better, she was in strict quarantine and couldn't have any visitors. They still got to talk through a window.
I love you so much. And honestly, it was really the least I could do because she has always been there for me. Everything that I've accomplished in my life, I can trace back to her. And also to honor the staff that take care of her because the staff at Allied are really heroic.
To date, Capelloni has already raised over $25,000 and donations keep coming. The funds will be used to buy smartphones and tablets so that the elderly that found themselves cut off during the pandemic could easily get in touch with their loved ones. Maxim Moskalkov for VOA News, Washington.
There's an old saying in theater that the show must go on. But when a global pandemic hits and the playbook on large gatherings is rewritten, shows like The Circus cannot go on. As VOA's Arash Arabasadi reports, performers in Brazil are taking a page from drive-in movie theaters to save their circus.
The coronavirus hurt artists at Estoril Circus in Rio de Janeiro when social distancing guidelines pulled performers from the stage and audience members from their seats.
For us, it was like losing a loved one. We lost the circus for 4 months with no hope of having it back until the vaccine was found.
Anderson de Souza Silva works as a clown. He is one of 35 performers left from a circus that employed 78 before the pandemic. That he still has a job is thanks to a change in how circus goers watch the show.
Today, thank God, we have the opportunity with the drive-in model to start the performance again. I'm very happy to be part of this new project.
By keeping the audience in their cars, circus administrator Nivaldo Jr. says the show adopted a proven winner for social distancing.
We remember the time of drive-in cinemas back in the day. All this time with no work, we were thinking of a way to relieve the stress the pandemic brought. And then the idea came, the drive-in circus.
Local councilman William Cesar says the show keeps his family grounded in the era of COVID.
To be in contact with the culture is very nice. It is amazing. My daughter is loving it. Many times she's the one honking. They won't hear if we clap, so we honk instead.
For circus staff, the show is an opportunity both for work and keeping people connected in a time of hardship.
We do it like the cinemas. Families come to the circus and watch this big show to have some joy in these rough times that we are going through during quarantine.
The Estoril Circus started in Portugal in 1898 and has been in Brazil for 30 years. This is the first time crowds of cars circled the stage instead of people. Arash Arabasadi, VOA News, Washington.
We're happy to have spent some time with you today on VOA Asia, and although our program is ending, you can continue to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, all under the name of VOA Asia. We thank those who helped bring you this program, including Managing Editor Diane Gao and our VOA Asia team, Ira Melman, Doug Bernard, and Keith Lane. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. We hope you have a super day ahead. Be safe. Be well.